Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the Seth and Sean. Wait a second. As we said last week, Seth is enjoying his hiatus from the show. He's a week away. He's in California. He's hiking up Yosemite. He's enjoying Mother Nature. The stuff that happens when you go outside and you enjoy the earth. And I'm here in an apartment in downtown Manhattan. It's a little rainy outside. It's not what Yosemite is. It's not what Yellowstone is. There's no Yogi Bear with his picnic baskets. But alas, sports still does go on. And unlike my esteemed co-host, that when I took vacation was not here, he took the week off. The show must go on here at the Sean and Seth Show, at least for this week. Actually, I have a surprise guest for you. He will be co-hosting the first half hour with me in approximately 5 minutes, and I will leave that to your imagination. We're going to be talking a lot about hockey. We're going to be talking a lot about hockey. Hockey just ended yesterday. It was a great six-game series, and we'll talk more about that when he comes on. 7:30, we're going to go to baseball because we know how much Seth does not like baseball. Well, it's not fair. It's not that he doesn't like baseball. It's the fact that he thinks that it's too slow. And he's kind of right. It is too slow. It's not the fastest sport in the world. But at the same time, you have to give it credit as America's pastime. It's not the most popular sport in the world anymore. Badly got is football. We know that. Soccer, Euro Cup on the horizon. Oh, for those that would like to call in, I always seem to forget the number. It's 760-283-0846. 760-283-0846. We don't have a question of the day this week because it was very hard for me to come up with something that I could not discuss with Seth. So I'm just going about my daily business, and I will come up with something over the course of the hour in which I will discuss. But right now, it's been a very interesting week in sports. It always is an interesting week in sports. Don't I say that every week? I seem to. So let's go through it. We got the NBA Finals, which is coming up starting tonight, 9 o'clock. We got Durant versus LeBron. Durant versus LeBron. You couldn't ask for a better matchup, especially since I predicted this one. So the two teams that Seth predicted, which were the Spurs and the Celtics, seem to have gone out in the last round. So as Seth said to me over the week, can I please pick a sport that is correct? And Sean, you are on a great run. Well, I have to give my co-host in crime, a little bit of credit because he did pick the Bradley over Pacquiao fight earlier this year. I think he predicted that in March. Now, I'm not saying that Pacquiao didn't deserve to win the fight because, man, come on. If you look at it, you couldn't ask for a better hose job for Pacquiao than he got. But, yes, here I am talking about boxing. It's amazing. When we're together, I have nothing to talk about when it comes to boxing. I have nothing to talk about when it comes to Euro Cup. And here it is, the 1 week that Seth is gone, and I'm talking about both boxing and the Euro Cup and hockey and baseball and the NBA Finals, which we'll touch upon a little bit later in the show as game one of the NBA Finals is tonight. And trust me, I'm looking forward to it. It is the matchup that everybody wants to see. Well, everybody outside of Boston and San Antonio wants to see. And the big three, at least for the Miami Heat, maybe not the big three for the Celtics, the big three for the Miami Heat, are really going to have to show that they are good. And it looks like we have our guest host. So I'm going to bring on our guest host right now, if I can figure out how to do this. Here we are. Let's see. Mitch, are you on?
I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, my esteemed co-host, my brother, Mitch Palmer.
The only person
that
knows more about hockey than Sean.
He is one of the few that know. You know what? There are a few. I mean, we do have Keegan Reed, who obviously knows more than me. He is our hockey expert on the site backsportspage.com. But my brother and I, who grew up going to Islander games together, he is extremely knowledgeable in the sport of hockey. And with Seth out of the picture this week, Seth is on the left coast with you, Mitch. He's actually in Yosemite this week. So we have decided
I consider Arizona the west coast, but thank you.
Okay, he is in your time zone? Can we say that?
Well, when he gets to be 115 degrees here, we're in Mexico.
Okay. So he's in your time zone. He may not be on your coast. You're on the southwest coast. Is that better?
Yeah. All right.
So when he gets into your time zone, he's in your time zone, and so you have taken the place of Seth, which, quite frankly, is a good thing for this week because Seth cannot talk about hockey. And
all
with
right,
the Devils
well,
losing this week, it must be killing him. So what do you think about last night's game?
Is he a Devils fan?
He is a Devils fan.
That sucks.
Yeah, it's not a good week for him. He got both of his NBA predictions wrong, and his team lost in hockey. Not a good week for Mr. Caymans whatsoever, but he is on vacation in Yosemite, where I would love to be. So props to him for that.
That should feel very fortunate, though, because a number six team getting as far as it did, I know obviously the Kings wanted number eight, but the Western Conference is significantly more difficult than the Eastern Conference. So even though the Kings were number eight walking in, they were playing playoff hockey for the last month, at six games before the end of the season. They weren't even in the playoffs yet. And the Devils, they squeaked in at six, but you know they were very content at six. They weren't feeling the pressure from anybody below them trying to get in yet, and so. They were very comfortable at six by the time that the end of the season came. So, you know, they were very fortunate to make the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, I got a question for you, though. You just said that the West was harder than the East. And I talked to a lot of people recently, and they think, and I'm one of them, I believe that the East was a much more difficult path to the Stanley Cup. I mean, you had the Flyers, you have... The highest scoring teams were in the East. The more physical teams were in the East. And quite frankly, if you look at the Kings, aren't they an East team? I mean, 50% of their club is from Philadelphia.
50% is from Philadelphia. They had three players from Philadelphia, Gagne, Richards, and Carter.
No. They have a lot more than that. Justin Williams played in Philadelphia. Colin Frazier
played for Philadelphia, but didn't come over this past year.
Right, agreed. But what I'm saying is these are Eastern Conference players that are
the sentiment that a player can be an Eastern Conference or a Western Conference player these days. Some of these players have played for upwards of four different teams in the last 15 years, or at least 12 years.
You will get no argument from me. What I am saying is that the Eastern Conference, and you, certainly correct me if I'm wrong, you are definitely more of a hockey guy than I am. The Eastern Conference, to me, is a more physical conference than the Western Conference. Is that true?
You know, I look at the standings in front of me. The bottom team that didn't make it, the nine team that didn't make it was Calgary with 90 points, and the Western Conference. And the bottom team that didn't make it in the Eastern Conference was Buffalo with 89 points. But if you look, who didn't make it in the Western Conference? Calgary, Dallas, Colorado, and who didn't make it in the Eastern Conference? Buffalo, Tampa, Winnipeg. I'm not particularly terrified of facing Winnipeg in the playoffs, but I would be a little apprehensive about playing Calgary, Dallas, or Colorado.
I completely understand that. I guess what I'm trying to say is a different style of hockey in the West.
Yeah,
than
it used
the
to be that the Eastern Conference was much more wide open and the Western Conference was much more physical. And now that sort of reversed itself with the Eastern Conference having to get tougher because the Western Conference was tougher. But even in the teams that were, even in the teams that did eventually make the playoffs, the teams that, like the Rangers, Philly, always going to be tough for sure. New Jersey, always going to be tough for sure. But I don't consider, like, Ottawa, Washington, Florida to be tough. I mean,
no, but I think you're making. I think you're kind of making my point, and that's what I'm trying to say.
No, I'm saying that in the Western Conference, every team from 1 through 8, I would consider a bunch of tough guys. Like, I would not want to play Detroit. I would not want to play Chicago. I would
not
want to play San Jose.
Okay, but I'm not saying that they are not good teams. Nowhere in there was my philosophy that they are good. They are not good teams.
To get to the Stanley Cup. You just think
Stanley
Cup from the East.
I think it is
the West.
I believe that, but I guess what I'm trying to say, what I'm trying to say is that the Eastern Conference has, look, it may not be as good, but I think it is a more physical style of play than the Western Conference. And I think you're right. In the past, it kind of flipped, where the Western Conference was a more physical style than the Eastern, when you had Detroit at its heyday against Colorado, two of the more physical teams with Claude Lemieux and Chris Draper going at it. But I guess what I'm saying is the Western Conference champion, who later became the Stanley Cup champion, is a physical team. And the reason I say that, I think a lot of it has to go back to the fact that most of their players came from the Eastern Conference. They're not
I don't feel like that. Not, there's no correlation between players that played for the East that moved to the West. I mean, these are teams. These are players that, have, like I said, played for multiple teams. They played for multiple teams throughout their entire history. They came up from juniors. So you're saying that if a player played in the Western Hockey League with the Red Deer Rebels and then got drafted by, say, the Islanders and then went to Bridgeport Sound Tigers, then got put in the NHL with the Islanders, but then got traded to Los Angeles, that he would be more physical because he played for the Eastern Conference, which I don't agree with.
That's, well, I guess what I'm saying is would you grant me that the Flyers are a very physical team year in and year out?
Every year, they're a physical team.
Okay, they are a physical team. So we have 5 guys that came from their team at some point.
Yeah, at some point.
At some point. And
that got signed previous to the season, and and Richards and Carter that got signed in multiple draft trades, in multiple trades.
Right.
So, yes, I agree with you.
So, and all 5 of those guys came up in the Philadelphia system, every single one of them.
Yeah.
They all started in Philadelphia. They all played at. The only person that
Carter,
didn't play more than...
Carter made a brief stop in Columbus, though.
Columbus.
So, I mean...
I guess I'm thinking more of a mentality issue, that the Kings would probably be a more physical style team than any other team in the West because of the mentality that their players coming over from the Flyers, particularly, and their coach and their general manager...
Philly's a tough team, and certainly... And certainly that Los Angeles had John Stevens, who was the coach of the Philadelphia Flyers when they made their run a couple of years ago against the Blackhawks. So they had an added presence of toughness in their lineup from John Stevens, the assistant coach. So I would say that there is a toughness, maybe not a physical fighting presence, but certainly a toughness that they know what it takes to get to the Cup Finals coming from Philly. I think that most of these players are tough guys. Certainly there is a tough guy mentality in Philadelphia. There always has been. They are not a weak-minded team. So, yeah, I mean, either way.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about last night. Last night was basically a draw until one major penalty came, which was a boarding penalty, a 5-minute boarding penalty. The guy that was boarded was Rob Scuderi. For those that don't remember, Rob Scuderi played a very important role in the Pittsburgh Stanley Cup win just a couple of years ago. And there's been some talk that in that situation you don't call that penalty. It was I don't remember the guy's name from the Bernier. Devils. Bernier, that's right.
Bernier puts Gary in the fourth. And just a few minutes before that, in a non-call, Stahl had put Gianta into the sideboards by the bench in a very similar but not so brutalized check from behind, where because there was no glass, the check from behind that Stahl put into Gianta was actually seemingly minimized because it didn't have that oomph, that impact, that bam into the boards the way Scuderi was pushed in by Bernier. So I don't think the refs saw it as such a blatant hit, but you have to call that Scuderi hit every single time. First of all, there's blood on the ice. You can't ignore the blood on the ice. So there obviously has to be some kind of penalty, whether it's a five-minute major penalty or a double minor for blood, for laceration of some kind. There's going to be a penalty. Was it worth a five-minute major boarding and a game misconduct? I think it was probably worth a five-minute major. Maybe not a game misconduct, but they're calling that 2 weeks ago. They're calling that in the third period. They're definitely calling it in the first period. They're calling it in October. This is what the NHL has been said from day one of the 2011-2012 season. The refs need to call that penalty. That's a penalty every time.
Now, okay, so that was the penalty. So basically, it doesn't matter to you. And I know we grew up saying that the penalty in the first period should be the same as the penalty in the third period. And that's the way I've always believed. That's the way I believe you've always believed. And the fact of the matter is, back in the 80s, that certainly wasn't true. The refs tend to swallow their whistles in the third period. The refs tend to swallow their whistles in the fourth quarter in the NBA finals. So you believe that this was a penalty, no matter what the time, no matter what the place, first game in the regular season, this is a penalty.
This is a penalty, and if you even watch the 4.5 minutes in the third, with the Kings up 4-1 in the third, 4.5 minutes left, or 3.5 minutes left, the Devils pull their goalie to get an extra man, and you see Lewis skating up the ice, gets a penalty, gets hooked, passes it to the mid. I'm sorry, I don't know who actually is coming up the ice, but he gets hooked. The ref calls it a penalty, passes it to the middle, and Lewis puts it into the empty net. So even with an empty net, with the Devils down 4-1, with there no chance of coming back, the refs are still calling penalties, knowing who the Stanley Cup victor is already going to be. So the refs were very on tune in this game. The Kings capitalized with three power play goals on a five-minute major. All three goals were just highlight reel goals. I mean, just phenomenal goals. Can't blame Marty Brodeur in the slightest on any of them. Even the one that Carter tipped in off of the captain from the Kings, it was still a brilliant goal. Justin Brown. There was no defense in any way on all three of those. Actually, the only goal that had any defense was the Lewis goal. And he got it tipped in underneath Brodeur's glove, but otherwise it was pathetic. It was like watching Pee Wee hockey. What was it? Three goals on five shots in the power.
So you credit LA just for doing a phenomenal job, and you tip your hat and game over, right?
First of all, there was no way that the Devils were going to win this game. The fact that they won two games, hats off to the Devils. Certainly, they're a great team. They've been there before. At least Marty Brodeur has been there before. So walking into the Stanley Cup Finals with your goalie having the knowledge and the trust and the innate skill set of already being there once and saying, "I've been here, guys. This is what we're going to experience. This is what we need to do. This is how we need to play." And still being down 3-0, yeah, there was no way the Kings were going to lose on their home ice.
Okay.
First time since 2007 that the Stanley Cup has been raised on home ice.
Absolutely, and I think that that is I have to say, I watched the whole Stanley Cup circling around and everybody getting the cup, and that to me is one of the highlights of any hockey season or highlights of any season. I mean, the cup is – it's the race for the cup. I mean, it is the iconic image for any sport. I mean, even more than the Super Bowl, because the Lombardi Trophy hasn't been around for 118 years.
I'll tell you some interesting stats. First of all, the last time they won, the last time the Stanley Cup was raised on home ice, 2007, you know who that was? The Anaheim Mighty Ducks, also a Southern California team.
Dustin Penner
raised the cup in 2007 for the Ducks and raised it last night for the Kings. He had won two cups, both with the Southern California teams. And more importantly, things that people don't know about the Stanley Cup, everybody gets their name. Everybody from the head coach to the trainers to the players, anybody that is actually behind the bench gets their name on the cup. Luke Robitaille finally winning his cup as a King, because even the administrators claim credit for winning the cup, even though they're not on the ice. This is the first time a Sutter brother has been on the cup not as a New York Islander.
That's
pretty cool.
The six cups that were won by Sutter brothers, this is the first time, I believe, in 29 years a Sutter has put their name on the cup. And we talked about, Seth and I talked about the tale of two seasons, which is what Daryl Sutter basically was for the Kings. And the Sutter brothers, Brian, Rich, Ron, Dwayne, Brent, and Daryl, the six Sutter brothers that played at one time, Brent had won two with the Islanders. I believe it was 81 and 82, no, 82 and 83. And Dwayne, who Daryl referred to as Dog, which I didn't know throughout my history that he is Dog. Dog won four cups. So it would be it's very interesting. 29 years later, that Brian has coached, Daryl has coached, Brent has coached, and Brian. I think that's it. The three didn't coach were Dwayne, Rich, and Ron. Yeah. That finally a Sutter has won as a coach.
It definitely proves that good players can make good coaches. And most importantly, the thing that I think that is incredibly crucial for most people out there that do not know this, you do not get paid in the Stanley Cup.
You don't get paid in the playoffs at all.
The whole purpose of you entering the playoffs, the entire mindset, mentality of you making the playoffs from day one is, I want to get my name on the cup. That's it. You do not make any money unless it's built into your contract for some extension goals or extension points or extension save percentage or extension win percentage or something like that as a coach.
And I don't even
make a salary.
I don't believe under the CBA that's actually allowed for playoffs.
That is allowed.
The fact of the matter is, in every other sport, you win some money. You get some money.
You
get playoff shares in baseball. You get your basketball team. You have your football. It's nothing compared to what these guys are earning every day. But there is some monetary incentive. In the NHL, there's no such thing. I think, I mean, Ross Regan would say the same thing. It is for the love of the game. I mean, I sincerely believe I missed the handshakes last night. I really did, and I'm going to go back and watch those tonight.
Quick and Brodeur do their handshakes, and I think that in a recent interview that I watched, actually it wasn't an interview. I was playing NHL 2012 on the Xbox by EA Sports. And even though I despise their commentary, which is just the most hideous commentary ever, because it's so repetitive.
Mitch, hold that thought. We actually have a caller, and we're going to bring on this caller with Mitch and Sean. Hold on one second. Let's hear who it is. Sarah, 703 number from Richmond, from Arlington, Virginia. Who is this?
This is Warren.
Warren, how you doing, buddy?
What the hell are you talking about, Sean?
Mr. Riley. Nice to hear your voice again, sir.
What the hell are you talking about?
This is my brother, Mitch. Mitch, this is Mr. Riley. I used to work with Warren.
Hey, Warren.
We're talking hockey.
What's up, fellas?
What's on your mind?
I just called to harass Sean.
Well, it's always fun to harass Sean. How can you not? I take great pleasure in it myself for the last 38 years.
I mean, really, Warren, if you're going to call about football, we're going to talk about the OTAs next week. So we'd love to have you call back on the Seth and Sean show next week, and we'll talk a little bit Redskin football.
RG3, baby.
RG3. All right, Warren, you've harassed me. This is fantastic. Next week, we're going to talk OTAs. We will talk RG3. I promise
you. Okay, cool.
All right, see you, Warren. Thanks again.
Have fun, guys.
So, Sean, here's a few
that
more.
That was fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't worked with Warren in a couple of years, and Warren is one of the biggest Redskin fans I know. He wore a Redskin jersey to work every Monday when they won, and one year I decided that I was going to mock him when the Steelers beat the Redskins, and I wore my Miami of Ohio Roethlisberger jersey, which is actually red, and Warren almost ripped it off my back. Great stuff. We'll talk to Warren later in the summer, OTAs, possibly next week. Back to hockey,
well,
Mitch. Let's talk about Martin Brodeur for a second. Martin Brodeur has said that he is likely to come back next year. Good move or bad?
What he said, that's not what he said. What he said was that he's going to play while the game is fun, and right now the game is fun, so he's going to come back. Is losing still fun, however? Is losing 4-2 still fun for Martin Brodeur to come back to a game, to day in, day out, come back and play 40 to 50 games to try to make it back one more time? I don't know at this point. He said that it was fun before the series began, but so rarely is Brodeur on this side of the emotional spectrum. He usually goes in, if he makes the Stanley Cup Finals, he's pretty much a lock to win. I don't think he's been on this side that often, and so we'll see if he considers losing to still be fun.
Well, from what I understand, he said something to the degree that he was probably coming back last night. I did hear that on the radio, and it's what I heard. To you, do you think, first of all, you saw this series. I thought Martin Brodeur, and we've talked about this at length, you and I. We got about another 10 minutes on hockey. And if you want to call in, please do. 760-283-0846. Talk with Mitch and Sean. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking like this every week for 36 years about hockey. We love talking hockey, and we'd love to talk with you as well. 760-283-0846. And what I'm saying, Mitch, is that, Mark, we had this conversation, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, where we said if we had one game to win, who we would want to win, who would we want? And you were picking Brodeur in there. I know Seth picked Dominic Hasek for one game in his prime. My call was Patrick Waugh. And I'm afraid
that you can win with all three of those players, obviously.
Obviously, yep. But I'm saying if I have to go to bat, if I have to go to the net with one guy, that's my guy. And Waugh went out on top. Hasek, not so much. Where does Brodeur coming back next year? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I saw a little chink in the armor for him in this series. I mean, I didn't see the mark
for Brodeur. You can only back up your defense so much before the amount of shots that you get on you consistently night in and night out make it into the net. No one is pitching straight shutouts throughout the entire playoff. In fact, the fact that Jonathan Quick has three shutouts in 20 games to me is absolutely psychotic to consider that in the playoffs. So to think Marty Brodeur could pitch shutouts every night just because he's Marty Brodeur is not possible. You look at the goals last night alone, I swear, sometimes I think that they were playing five forwards on the ice. I didn't see the two defensemen almost anywhere, especially Dustin Brown's goal where he came up the side and came into the middle and pulled his forehand and shot to the upper right hand over the glove side of Martin Brodeur. And where was Jeff Carter? Literally right in front of Martin Brodeur, not a defenseman in sight. So
is
Martin
this,
Brodeur
is
right
a...
now playing not only goalie, but maybe even a number one or number two defenseman. Because don't forget, everybody consistently believes that because the way Martin Brodeur plays the puck, he's so aggressive on the puck, he's actually more of a third defenseman, not just a goalie. So I think that you rely too much on him to get his to get it done, and then the defense gets lax. So I don't blame Martin Brodeur for all the goals.
Mitch, just hold on a second. What Seth made a very interesting point a couple of weeks ago, and granted, Seth making a hockey point is mind-boggling to me, but he did make an interesting hockey point in the fact that he said, is Martin Brodeur – now, Martin Brodeur is a great goalie. We all know this. He's probably one of the top 10 goalies of all time. I mean, he has a lot of records. He has a lot of wins records, a lot of games played records. But is he more – and this is why he picked Tkachuk more than anybody else – is he a product of the system? And you just pointed out that he doesn't have those defensemen in front of him. When he was winning Stanley Cups, he had probably two of the top five defensemen in the league in front of him. Is he a product of that?
No, I think that you win a Stanley Cup as a team. You don't win a Stanley Cup as an individual. And the one thing the Devils didn't have as much as the Kings did this year was the Kings played as a team. They had depth as a team, even down to Jordan Nolan, by the way, son of Ted Nolan, former coach of the New York Islanders, even down to Jordan Nolan, who John Stevens, the assistant coach, credits as one of the key pickups, a seventh-round draft pick by the Kings 4 years ago to still make it this far. You can see that there's a depth, and we always said that. Remember when the Pittsburgh Penguins were winning, their fourth line was scoring. With the Devils, they didn't have quite the same depth that the Kings did, and that's why the Kings won. I don't think that Brodeur is a product of anything. It's just that when he had better defensemen, they were playing as a better team. Last night, I did not see the team mentality. I saw an individual level mentality.
Okay.
So that would be my thing there.
I can take that. Okay, so we got about 8 minutes left on hockey because I do want to talk a little bit on baseball and basketball, and you're more than welcome to stay on and continue hosting with me. I would love for it. However,
let's talk about free agency because you did say
that's where I was going. So right now, I think some of the more precarious teams are some of the better teams. I mean, the Kings don't have much in regards of free agent players. They really don't. They have a backup goalie, which everybody wants, and Jonathan Bernier, who I believe he has one more year on his contract at about $1.3 million. So everybody's going to want him. And Steve Yzerman has already said, I want to trade for a goalie. Him and Corey Schneider up in Vancouver, who is a restricted free agent, these are guys that he would target. However, the Devils, on the other hand, Devils got a big piece. Zach Parise coming off. Where do you see him going?
First of all, let me just comment in the 20 seconds that I see the Kings coming back and having a very strong 2012-2013 season. They don't have to move that many people. They're going to keep all the horses in place kind of thing. They're coming off a Stanley Cup victory. They're going to train very hard in the summer. They're going to be very good next year. They're going to be a very strong-minded, you know, depth team. I see the Devils yes, they have players like Parise maybe going somewhere or Martin Brodeur maybe retiring, but overall they're a good team. They just have a lot of people they have to re-sign, so they're not going to have the same kind of core mentality that say LA does. But just to touch on a few of the key players, first of all, I don't see Schneider going anywhere. He's going to be the next big star in Vancouver. Roberto Luongo has already anointed him as a follow-up to him. If you remember, Roberto Luongo not only said he would remove his no-trade clause. Vancouver didn't actually ask him to remove his no-trade clause. He went to Vancouver and said, "I need to leave here. This isn't the place for me anymore. I need to go find a place. I'm removing my no-trade clause. Find me a team." If he winds up
okay,
in
so
Tampa,
where is he gonna
I
go?
Would not be shocked at all.
He would be a
great fit in Tampa.
Okay, but let's talk about the logistics of him going to Tampa. He's got a $8 million cap hit. No, I'm sorry, it's a $5.5
million
cap hit.
$5.5 million
cap hit for the next, I believe it's 8 years. in Tampa right now.
It is a very long contract.
Hold on. Mitch, hold on a second. I understand the length of the contract. The contract length is not as important as the contract value. At this point, a $5.5 million hit, right now Tampa has three players, each with a cap hit of over $6 million. The cap itself is about $53 million. So you're going to tie up 23. You're going to tie up $23 million in four players? Or are you going to trade one of the big three for Tampa Bay, being Stamkos or LeCavalier or Martin St. Louis, in a trade for Roberto Luongo? I mean, you have to minimize the cap hit somewhere. Where do you do that?
I think that if you have four people that will get you there, maybe I do take that risk. But I think that LeCavalier has played better days in Tampa right now. I think that you don't trade Stamkos. I would sit on that guy. I would put Thor's hammer on his chest and guarantee that he never leaves Tampa. I might trade LeCavalier to Vancouver for Luongo and someone, or Luongo and a draft pick maybe. I think Luongo will be a draft day trade on the draft in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
I think that the people that you wrote to me in the email, such as Parisi. Okay, first of all, the Devils would love to keep Parisi. I mean, certainly he's an unrestricted free agent. He's going to be out there. Clubs are going to be bidding high value for him. He is a great centerman. He is an unbelievable leader in the clubhouse. His father, J.P. Parisi, formerly of the New York Islanders, formerly of the Summit Cup, formerly of the Canada Cup, their whole lineage is super great. The Devils, unfortunately, will not be able to re-sign J.P. Parisi because the Devils...
No, you mean not J.P. Parisi. J.P. Parisi played a long time ago. You're talking about Zach.
Yeah. I meant Zach Parisi. The thing about the Devils is that even though they're in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area, they are not actually a big... They are not a New York team. They're a New Jersey team. And because they're a New Jersey team, they have to deal with other issues, much like the New York Islanders have to deal with different issues than, say, the New York Rangers, where the Devils right now are not essentially a money-making team. Are they in the red? Are they in the black? Absolutely. They are making money, but they are not making money the way the Rangers are making money. If the Rangers were in the Stanley Cup Finals versus the Kings, the Rangers would have made literally $100 million easily. The Devils made an estimated $33 million during their extended lengthy playoff run. Just $33 million. That does not add a lot to the ability of the Devils to re-sign valuable players.
Okay, Mitch, we got two more minutes. Let me name a player, and you tell me where you think he's going. Okay?
All right.
Let's play a game. Okay. J.P. Parisi, where is he going? I made the same problem. He's going to retirement. Zach Parisi, where is he going?
I think he's either going to go to the Rangers or maybe even Colorado.
Okay. Let's go to Ryan Suter, who is an unrestricted free agent.
Ryan Suter or Shea Weber, either one of those guys, they're going to look at Detroit. Detroit is going to sign them because Nick Lindstrom recently retired. Detroit is going to have a huge amount of money to play with this summer, amount of money that they had never had before in the last 20 years because Lindstrom has been playing there for so long.
Absolutely.
So they're going to be able to sign both of those guys.
Well, the difference in the both of the guys is that Ryan Suter is an unrestricted free agent. A restricted free agent is what Shea Weber is. Now, Shea Weber...
Yeah, but I think they will be happy to say, thank you, Nashville, please enjoy these draft picks so we can trade for Shea Weber.
If you are taking a $6 million cap hit, just for our listeners out there, a $6 million cap hit to sign a Shea Weber, you are giving up not only your first, but your second, third, and fourth of next year. So it is very, very important to understand that. Okay.
Well, that's not saying it's only going to be a draft pick trade. There could be other people in the trade. But I mean,
I
see them making a hard push for Shea Weber, but don't forget I see Nashville making a hard push for Shea Weber too. So
yes,
I mean,
understood.
He's been there the longest. He's the captain. They love him. He's a fanatical player in Nashville. He was born in, you know, he's basically, his home is there. Why would he want to leave at this point when Nashville
okay,
makes the playoffs this year?
I got two more for you, and then we're going to start talking about baseball. Number
no,
one,
I can't
where
be
does,
responsible for that.
I understand. Rick Nash, where does he go?
Well, I want to say he's going to go to a Western Conference team. I want to say that. Unfortunately, Rick Nash does have that significant problem where he is a ginormous cap hit, and in the players of cap hits right now, the one person that has not proven themselves above and beyond is Rick Nash. He's played with Columbus for a long time. Columbus has been a bottom dwelling team in the NHL. He's not made the playoffs. He has not had an extended playoff run. He's never been an MVP. Unlike, say, Parise and Suter or Weber and these guys, they are winners. They can play on a winning team. Rick Nash, oh. He's still cheap, but he could go to Anaheim. I like him in Anaheim. I like him in Calgary. See, those teams, they need caps. They need to bring up their minimum cap space.
Well, no. Calgary is buttressed against the cap. Calgary cannot make a trade unless they trade a guy. It is an impossibility. They are $750,000 below the cap.
From the cap.
They're not making
well,
a cap.
Well, I don't have all the cap numbers in front of me, just the top 10
understood.
Teams. So Calgary clearly is not a top 10 team. So that makes you question that.
Let's go to our last two. One is Alexander Radulov. Where is he?
I think he stays in Nashville.
Wow, because David Poley, who's the GM, has told everybody in no uncertain terms that he is gone. You think he's going to renege on that?
I don't think
keep
so.
Him?
But I honestly don't think so because – what?
Okay. Understood.
So, okay, I don't think so. I know he has said that he is gone, but the reason I don't think so is because they pushed – put so much effort on the NHL to bring him back.
Yep.
And I don't see, you know, the NHL at this point is going to go, okay, Nashville, you had your one buy for your entire franchise history. Seriously, stop screwing with us.
Okay, so my last question is, Martin Brodeur, is he back or not?
He's back.
He's back.
I think he's back because
does he ruin his legacy by coming back?
So much.
Does he ruin the legacy by coming back?
What'd you say?
Does he ruin... Okay, Dominic Kashuk ruined his legacy by coming back.
There is no possible way that Martin Brodeur can ruin a quote-unquote legacy. He's won every possible trophy known to mankind in NHL, even going back to the Canada Cup. There's no possible way that Martin Brodeur is not a first ticket NHL God in any Hall of Fame that they want to put him in. But the thing is that right now, Martin Brodeur does have the ability to do something that he has not in the past, and that is train the next great New Jersey Devil goalie. See, he could do that next year. He could take 35 games and give his backup the other 45 games and spend a year training him because the day that Martin Brodeur retires is the day that the New Jersey Devils offer him a front office job. And that front office job is going to be goaltending coach.
Agreed. Okay. Well, I really thank you for coming on. It's been a great 40 minutes. We haven't talked hockey pretty much this entire year. And I really do appreciate you coming on. And maybe we'll towards the training camps in September, we'll have you on again.
Yeah, and if you hear any rumors or you prove me wrong on anything, you know, I'd definitely like to get back on. I don't say, you know, with Nashville, the whole thing is they're Nashville. So, to me, I don't know. I'm not a Western Conference lover. But I do say this for the Islanders next year. I think they make the playoffs. I think that Nico Niederreiter is back in the AHL where he belongs for the next 2 years. I never want to see this kid in an NHL sweater until he's played at least 2 years in the AHL first. This is the year for that. So
All right,
I see that. I see Ryan Strome may be making a big break in the NHL.
All right, great. Thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it.
Cool. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. See ya. And that was my brother, Mitch Palmer, who you could never say is not influential or does not root for the Islanders. I mean, my brother and I went to Islander games from the age of probably 6 months to the age of 18 nonstop. We were Islander season ticket holders. Four cups later, a couple of All-Star games, saw the Bossy, Potvin, saw everything that went along. And we became great fans. And I'm not ashamed to say I still root for the Islanders. I'm probably one of 20 people in the entire world. My brothers are two of the others. And hockey is an interesting sport. It is one of those sports that you really, really, really have to love. You have to fall in love with it. And the only way that you can fall in love with hockey is going to a game. I highly suggest anybody that is listening to this cast next year, go to a game. It's one of the cheaper sports out there. I wouldn't necessarily say that going to a Ranger game and sitting in the 100 level for a family of four is going to be fantastic for your budget, because trust me, it's not. Or going to an Islander Ranger game or an Islander Devil game is going to be fantastic for your budget, because it's not. But you will gain an appreciation for a sport that I don't believe exists anywhere else. It is nonstop action. It is nonstop action all the time. And when Mitch brought up, I totally forgot this, that players do not get paid for winning a Stanley Cup. That is a great point, because that doesn't happen, as I said, in any other sport. Okay, we're going to move on from hockey, because you know what? We've got about 14 minutes left. If you'd like to call in again, 760-283-0846. Love to hear from you. Love to hear from all of our listeners. And again, this is your show. So call in. I'm looking at the phone line right now. I don't see anybody on it. But I would like to ask that some people do call in, because it is a good time. And it's a good time talking to you, our loyal listeners. And Seth is in Yosemite, not listening to the show. I can guarantee you that. But he's having a good time. And hopefully next week he'll be back well refreshed. And we'll talk a little bit about the NBA Finals, which I'm going to touch on right about now. I said we were going to talk about baseball today, but you know what? It's still June. And in June, we don't really talk about baseball. But I am going to give you the question of the week for next week. The question of the week for next week is, what is the worst contract you have seen? Now, I understand you're going to come up with the Barry Zitos, the Mike Hamptons. You can even come up with the Rick DiPietros in deference to my brother. What is the worst contract you've seen? Because the Andre Ethier contract, which we will talk about a lot next week, is one of the worst contracts in baseball right now, and he just signed it. The Ryan Howard contract, one of the worst contracts in baseball, and it just went into effect this year. These extensions that they're giving younger players, and Ethier had all the mojo in his corner. He had all the leverage because he's leading Major League Baseball in RBIs right now, which is an interesting stat, which we'll get into next week as well, why the Sabre matricians do not believe that RBIs are a good statistic to use, nor do they think wins are a good statistic to use. And hopefully we'll have somebody on that will explain that a little bit better than me. But we will talk about that next week. So next week's question is, what is the worst contract in sports that you recall? And we'll talk about that a lot next week. We'll spend a good amount of time, because I know Seth and baseball, not really hand-in-hand. It's kind of like Seth and hockey. We'll talk a little bit about the Euro Championship as well when he goes back. Hopefully we'll have a couple of guests on to talk about that. Okay, 8 o'clock. I believe it's not 8 o'clock. It may be on at 8:30. I'm going to check that right now, what time that game is on tonight. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you have 8:30. You have reached the NBA Finals. LeBron is back in the NBA Finals. The Heat are back in the NBA Finals. Dwayne Wade is back for a third time in the NBA Finals, and Chris Bosh is back as well. And he's back playing well. And he's the key to this series for me. Because you're going to have one, if you have not tuned into the NBA this year, and I can understand why, because you know what, in some manners, speaking, the NBA is a little boring. Because you have teams that you know are going to win, teams that you're not sure how they really go in, and you got all these overpriced players that want more and more money, and you kind of get sick of it, especially when you have the NCAA tournament, and you see the pride and joy that you have in your team. I get that. I totally get that. But if you're going to watch a series, I tell you, this is the one to watch. This is going to be an absolutely fantastic series. And I say that, not fantastic maybe as far as the way the basketball is being played. It's not going to be a fundamentally great series. You're not going to see a lot of movement. You're not going to see a lot of San Antonio spur basketball. It's just not going to happen. That's not the way these teams are built. In fact, neither team is really built the way that the Kareem teams were built, or what you and I would say is a regular team. When we were growing up, you had two forwards, a point guard, a shooting guard, and a center, and the center was a big guy. You had those centers like Todd McCullough, Mike Jaminski, Shaquille O'Neal, Alonzo Mourning. I mean, I can go on and on. Moses Malone with Fall, which is Seth's favorite. Will Chamberlain, Jack Sigma, Bill Walton, Kevin Duckworth, the late Kevin Duckworth, even Bill Laimbeer. Bill Laimbeer would actually fit very well with this style of offense because in this series you're going to see none of that. You see glorified, and what I call glorified, power forwards playing the center position. Serge Ibaka, who never met a block or an attempt to block that he didn't like, is playing the center. Kendrick Perkins is a 6'9", undersized center, playing center. Chris Bosh is going to be playing center for the Heat, along with Joel Anthony and Udonis Haslem. Joel Anthony is the biggest center in this series, and he's 7 foot. But he's also thin. It is a different type of game this year. It is a different type of NBA. It's going to be run and gun. It's going to be showtime all over again. It's kind of going to be like the Lakers and Celtics. This is going to be a lot of fun. You're going to see the matchup that you really have to look at is who can transition better. Because the Heat have not seen an offense like the Oklahoma City Thunder. And even more so, the Oklahoma City Thunder have not seen a defense like the Heat. So you have kind of both. And it's an interesting dynamic between the two. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And that's what it should be. The NBA should be fun. And recently, it hasn't been that way. So I implore you, I really do, I implore you to turn into the game tonight. At least try it for one game and see if you like it. If you like it, tune in for another one. I'm not here representing the NBA. I'm not here representing the Heat. That's certainly not going to happen. And I'm not here representing the Thunder. If you are a sports fan and you saw the Stanley Cup and how good that was, because it was open ice. It wasn't really dragged down, trapping the way it was. I suggest highly that you tune into this game tonight and just give it a try. My prediction in the game tonight is the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to come out with so much emotion. I hesitate to pick them to win, though, because I think sometimes emotion is overrated. I love the Thunder in the series. I will go back to what I predicted at the beginning of the playoffs, and that was that the Thunder will take the championship. I said they would take it in 7 games. I will hold firmly to that because, honestly, I still think that that is the way it's going to be. They are the best team in the NBA. Now, do I think LeBron James can certainly take over this game? Oh, yeah. Do I think he can take over the series? Oh, yeah. Last week's 45-15 in five games, the first one since Wilt the Stilt did, way back when, to me was the second best performance in an NBA game ever. That's saying a lot. I think it was better than Wilt's 100. I think it was better than Kobe's 81. I think it was better than any of the triple-doubles that Jason Kidd did or any of the triple-doubles that Magic Johnson had. It was a game for the ages. He could not miss. And it was so enjoyable to watch him play because he, you know what? You can say LeBron did it badly with the whole boys and girls and the decision thing. I agree with you. I totally agree with you that he did it badly. But I wrote a piece for Back Sports Page 2 years ago when he made that decision, the decision. I have no problem with him taking his talent to South Beach or anywhere else, and neither should you. And this is my 5 minutes until we're done. So I'm gonna go on my little rant here. None of you, no listener, myself included, should have any problems with LeBron James in Miami. None. I know that Seth says that he can't be the best player ever because he's playing with Dwayne Wade. BS. And a huge amount of it. LeBron James was a free agent. He didn't say no. He didn't say trade me. He didn't say I'm not going to play for Cleveland while he had a contract. No, he didn't. I am infatuated by the way that Boston has fallen in love with Kevin Garnett. And the world has fallen in love with Kevin Garnett. I am a huge Kevin Garnett fan. He is my favorite player in the NBA. But what he did in Minnesota was Bush League, was absolute Bush. He demanded a trade while he still had a contract. I don't subscribe to that. I never have and I never will. You have a contract, you play. You don't sit around and baby yourself and say, I'm not going to play unless I play for this team or that team or whatever team. You know what? You all say that Ricky Rubio didn't come over to Minnesota because he was being a baby. You know what? He eventually came and he played, and he's playing in his contract, and Kevin Love the same thing. If you want to leave your team, wait till your contract is over. People don't remember that Greg Maddux, Manny Ramirez, and Kevin Garnett all played for different teams. They don't. The difference was Manny Ramirez and Greg Maddux waited until they were free agents and then left. Guys such as Shaquille O'Neal did the same thing. Now let's take a look at other players like Roger Clemens, who demanded a trade to Toronto. Kevin Garnett, who demanded a trade to Boston. I'd even go so far as saying a Martin Gabrick, who went to the Rangers. These guys demanded trades in the middle of their season. And that, to me, is Bush League. In the middle of their contract. That, to me, is Bush League. All right, we got about 2 minutes left. This has been an enjoyable day. I got to talk with my brother for an hour, or 40 minutes, about hockey. And he and I love to talk about hockey. And we have a couple of minutes, and I have to say thank you to him for getting me through this one show, which was all by myself. I had a really great time with Mitch. Mitch, thank you so much. Warren, buddy, it is great hearing from you. Please call back another time when we're going to talk about the Redskins, because Seth and I both have some views about RG3 that we'd love to share with you, and we'd love to hear yours. And you have an insight into the Redskins that many people do not. And for people that would like to talk about a specific sport or a specific question, I implore you, hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. Hit me up at my personal email, which is sean.k.palmer@gmail.com, and we will bring you on and we'll talk about what you want. This is a show for you guys as much as it is for us. I had a great time. Thanks to all our listeners from New York to California, to Canada, to Arizona. This is the best hour of the week for me. And I had such a great time. We miss Seth terribly, and we'll see him again next week. For Mitch Palmer, for Seth Kamens, and for myself, Sean Palmer, backsportspage.com. Thanks again. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.